Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today, a couple of hero stories. And while some of the heroic stuff in these stories is done by humans, the real heroes of these tales are horses. Our first story comes to us from Antonio Rocha, born and raised in Brazil, but a longtime resident of Maine. Antonio was trained as a mime, and his storytelling is filled with a physicality that's pretty wonderful to watch. So we captured video of Antonio's stories, and you'll want to check it out on our YouTube channel. Antonio's stories are wonderful to listen to as well, of course. And here's the tale of a heroic horse who becomes the only hope for a young girl bitten by a deadly snake. Here's Antonio with a story called Alasal, the horse that saved six lives.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This is a true story. Alazon, the horse that saved six lives. It happened long, long ago in the 1930s in a farm in the countryside of a state in Brazil called Rio de Janeiro. You see, Rio de Janeiro is a big city, capital city of the state of Rio de Janeiro. And this farm was way up in the interior. And it was nestled in a valley so steep. The valley, the mountains were so great. And the valley was so, so deep in there. The farm was located so, so deep in the valley that when a storm came in the middle of the day, midday became midnight. The farm grew coffee. The number one crop was coffee, Brazilian coffee. And the farmer had many families working for him. And Didi was only 9 years old. Her father was in charge of the coffee fields. He was of Portuguese heritage from Madeira Island, born in Brazil, but his parents had come from Madeira Island. And he inspected those beans, made sure it was best quality. And Didi, even though she was only 9, 10, 11, you know, she worked hard. She would bring him lunch every day, not only to him, but his hands, you know, his workers. He would watch her go downhill afterwards and get busy with something else, such as, you know, fetching water from a well and sweeping the front porch, taking care of her siblings, all brothers. Yeah, and one sister. But Didi was a kid. She loved playing. She climbed trees, played with her cousins, running around, building mud houses. And the animals, she loved the animals so much. There were beautiful birds migrating from North America. She didn't even know about North America, but those were the birds coming in for the summer. Jaguars would be spotted every once in a while. They're large anteaters. There are spiders the size of my hand, scorpions, and snakes. Very large snakes. The constrictors were friendly, and the farmers didn't mind the constrictors because they kept the rodents under control. But the ones they were concerned with were the vipers, the venomous snakes, especially a jararaca type, fur-de-lance type of snake, the jararaca, potent bite. Oh, the venom of a jararaca does not attack your nervous system like some venoms do. The jararaca's venoms attacks your molecular makeup, meaning you start to liquefy from the inside out. It is a horrendous death. So kids were told not to fool around with rotten wood, not to try to roll a rock, you know. Farm kids, they're running bare feet everywhere, so they were told what to do and what not to do, you know. And they did. They paid great attention. But from all these animals, the one Didi loved the most was her father's horse, Alazon. Alazon was this gorgeous horse. Alazon is a color, like a dark chestnut. collar. And Alazon would always be tied to a post in front of the house. And Didi knew Alazon was out there when her father was in the house, because that was his main mode of transportation. So dad would come in, right? Her father would come in, and she'd give him a hug and then just go outside and see her buddy, Alazon. And she had always treats, and she'd get into her pocket with some treats, and Alazon would eat right off her hand until it tickled. Hey, buddy. And then she always carried a brush. All right, come over here. There you go. All right. And she'd groom him so carefully and lovingly. And Alazon loved Didi's care. And when he looked presentable, that's when she would lean against his side like this and just enjoy each breath he took. Those two had a special connection. But then you'll all become a memory. A broomstick or some kind of a tool would be back in her hands. And this time, it was harvest time. You know, Didi had to gather a lot of debris. There's a lot of movement. Even the toddlers were helping. Harvest time was busy time. A lot of movement outside, and there's a lot of things that were going to be piled up. Didi was taking care of that, making big bonfire piles. They would be burned later on. And she's there, working hard, gathering all that work, all that stuff, just piling them in. One pile over here, another pile over there, and she would be just pulling. One pile here, one pile there, piles everywhere. And then the rake got stuck, and she got crossed with the rake, and she just pulled the rake towards her. It was instantaneous. When she pulled that amount of debris that got stuck towards her, she got this hot sensation up her leg. The next thing was all she could see was sky. She had fallen on her back, and the pain came in. Papai, papai, papai! Ciro Manuel, her dad, Ciro Manuel knew trouble when he heard it, especially coming from the kids. He came running towards her, towards the sound. Papai, papai, papai! And when he got to her, oh, Didi, she was covered in dirt. She was crying, and one of her legs was thrashing. She was thrashing one leg really hard. Her right leg was thrashing. And there was something different with her foot on that leg. Her foot looked bigger. And then, you know, Sir Manuel was still kind of getting used to the whole thing. You know, this is like a split second. And then he noticed that there was slithering motion. And then he sees the snake. He sees there's a snake. So his reaction is to take his knife off his belt and kill the snake, which he did. Because the snake wouldn't let go. It was a jararaca. Not a full-grown jararaca, but still a jararaca, all right. He took Didi to the house and laid her there in the kitchen. Everything happened in the kitchen, in the house. The cooking, the talking, the stories. Her mom came in crying, Dona Nedina. Senora Nedina came in crying. The windows were shut, the candles were lit, and they started to pray. This is a farm in the middle of nowhere. People knew how to set broken bones, how to stitch cuts, and snake bites and spider bites, any venom in the body, they knew how to take care of it too. Most of them were successful. They would mix animal fat with herbs and press on the wound. They would mix kerosene and make the victim drink a little bit of kerosene. And that worked for a lot of the animals. And they did that for Didi. You know, they were taking care of her. And then they heard Alazon. That's when they heard Alazon. Alazon was wild around the house. And Ciro Manuel was on him. You please take care of Didi. But I'm not going to stay here and see what's going to happen. I got to do something about it. I'm going to go to the village in search of that antidote thing. And he slapped Alazon hard. The village was 1 hour on horseback away from the farm. And those two went with a cloud of dust behind them. People rocking on their chairs, you know, on their porches along the way when they saw Alazon going by that fast. They knew something was wrong back in the farm. 1 hour later, Sir Baltazar, Sir Manuel burst into the drugstore. Sir Baltazar, Didi foi picada por uma jararaca. A jararaca pegou ela no pé. Sir Baltazar, oh my goodness, Didi was bitten by a jararaca. I'm so sorry to hear that. I held her when she was a tiny little thing. But I have the antidote. But I don't think my horse is strong enough to make it to the farm in time. That's not a problem. That should not... We don't know if it's going to be a problem or not, but here's the thing. If you think your horse is not good enough to get to the farm in time, I'll stay here and you take Alazon. Alazon is strong. Alazon is young. Alazon will take you there. Please, you have to try it. All we can do is try. Just get on Alazon. And Senor Baltazar gathered everything really quickly, jumped on that horse, and now people along the way saw the pharmacist going to the farm on Alazon instead of Senor Manuel. Now they knew something was really wrong. He literally jumped off the horse and burst into the kitchen. There was no time to waste. With his job done, he cleaned everything, covered Didi's leg up. She was out. Didi's mom was on her knees right next to Didi's face praying. There was no time to visit. It was time to go back to Senor Manuel. Senor Manuel, come out here. There was a crowd outside, inside Senor Manuel, you know, small town, everybody knew everybody. Senor Manuel, come out. Alazon is coming down street. Here's Alazon. Excuse me. Did you save her? Senor Manuel? Did you save her? Sir Baltazar? How's Didi? Did you save her? Sir Manuel, you know how these things go. Only time will tell if I got there in time. Just go home and pray. Pray along the way, and hopefully Alazon was fast enough. That ride back to the farm was the longest of Senor Manuel's life. That beautiful valley was dark and gray. Senor Manuel was in a story he didn't want to be. Alazon was tired. Back and forth. And then he saw his tiny little dwelling. He approached it. And as soon as he got off Alazon's back, Alazon collapsed. Agua! Agua! And they brought him water and threw water at him. Ribs heaving up and down, so tired. He drank. And Sir Manuel goes in the house. And the first thing he noticed when he walked in was light coming through the windows. The windows were open. And Didier was awake, complaining more from the antidote shot than from the snake bite. And you know what? When kids complain, it means they're going to be all right. And she was all right. It took a few weeks. She smelled like kerosene for a while. They say that kept her together until Alazon came with the medicine. Huh. And she limped. And as soon as she was allowed outside to play, she didn't play. She went straight to that horse and gave the horse the tightest of hugs for saving her life. I know I told you Alazon saved 6 lives. It's so true. But because of Alazon, right? Did you grow up? She had 5 children. Yeah. You're looking at the youngest. Thank you.
That was Antonio Rocha with Alazao, the horse that saved six lives. And listening to this story brought to mind a memory that's not so much about a heroic horse, though there is a horse in the memory, lots of them, in fact. The hero of this story is Old Pete, a beagle that had been the family pet for 13 years. That's 91 or so in conventional dog years. And by the end, boy, he was showing every day of those 13 years. He had this sort of resigned look about him, a sort of not long for this world look. And, well, I've sometimes wondered if old Pete's heart was in it anymore. And then one day, I found myself walking with Pete through some horse property. And the horses weren't usually on our side of the fence, but this morning, we were in a forest of them, gigantic horses all around us, quiet and still, munching on the field grass in the fog. Pete, it must be said, was gentle as a lamb, lived his whole life in this sort of befuddled friendliness. He wouldn't catch a ball or bark at a stranger, but his love was all yours, a real softy. But sometime during our walk among those enormous horses, Pete got underfoot of one of the really big ones in a way that must have spooked it. And in an instant, the horse tensed up and its eyes went a little wild and it kicked out with its huge legs. And one of its hooves squared Pete right on the side of the head and sent him skittering across the mud of the pasture. And then the horse came on again, stamping after Pete, its nostrils flaring. And with that horse bearing down on tiny little Pete, I was sure I was watching Pete's last moments. It was a little terrifying. But the truth is, Pete surprised me. Up went his hackles. Then the little beagle dug in and bared his teeth at that huge horse. And I ran at them both, waving my arms. And I might have been just in time. Or maybe Pete's defiance made the horse think twice. I don't know. But in any case, just when I thought it was all over for Pete, the horse snorted and just cantered off. Pete seemed okay. And I looked at that little dog with new eyes. I had very much misjudged him. He may have been generally pretty docile, but if I thought he didn't have much fight left in him, I was mistaken. Pete lived for years after that horse accident, and while he's gone now, I think about him all the time. I especially think of him when I feel a little resigned myself before the weight of the world's troubles. You ever feel that way? I do. And when I do, I remember Pete, all dug in, muscles flexed, teeth bared, with the shadow of that enormous horse above him. I remember that. And I keep on fighting. And that's where Antonio's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along?
I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life with a lot of laughs along the way. Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
We're so glad to have you with us today on the Appleseed Podcast. Our next story is told by storyteller Pippa White. It's a true story from the childhood of Mavis Buchholz, who saved her father's life with the help of her horse named Ranger. Here's Pippa with Ranger and Me.
I was raised right smack in the middle of North Dakota. I was an only child until I was 11 years old, so I spent a lot of time alone or playing with my many pets. Horses were my great love. I was 9 years old when I first met Ranger. He was a brown and white horse, a little taller than your average quarter horse of today. My dad had gotten him from a farmer about 50 miles from our place, and I was instructed never to ride that horse, never to even take it out of the barn, because it liked to run, and it might get away from me. But I had fallen in love with Ranger at first sight, so I spent hours getting to know him. And the great day came when he learned to trust me. And then the greater day came when my dad said I could ride him. Off we went onto the open prairie, and we became inseparable. One of my chores every day was to bring in all the dairy cows from the big pasture. That was 320 acres of wide open prairie. My dad always insisted that I ride bareback. No saddle for me. That way, if I was thrown or fell, I would not get entangled in the stirrups and be dragged. The summer that I was going on 11, my dad was asked by a friend of his who bought and sold horses if he wouldn't mind coming to a vacant farm about 6 miles from our place to help catch and load some wild horses. I was ecstatic. Wild horses. I begged and begged to be allowed to go on and to go along and bring my horse as well. My mother wasn't crazy about the idea, but I couldn't pass up this chance. Wild horses. My father finally relented, and we put Ranger onto the truck. But when we got to the abandoned farm, all the wild horses were already in the corral, so there was no need for Ranger. But I insisted. I had come to ride, and ride I would. So we took Ranger off the truck, put him in the barn, tied with his bridle on. And then my father went to help load those wild horses. One of the last horses became difficult to handle. So the men decided to snub the wild horse to a tame horse and get the renegade onto the truck that way. In the process of securing one horse to the other, the rope that was looped around the wild horse's neck and through the harness collar fell to the ground. And in all the hubbub, my dad stepped onto the coiled rope. There was so much dust generated by those two horses that it was impossible to see clearly. But in the blink of an eye, those two horses began to run. The truck driver and I strained through all that dust to find Dad, thinking that he was there holding onto that rope trying to stop those horses. But when those two horses galloped out of the corral and onto the wide open prairie, we could see that Dad's hands were in the air. He was not holding onto that rope. He was being dragged by those two horses. The truck driver began to run after him. I froze, but only for 1 second when I remembered my horse in the barn. Ranger was upset by all the commotion, but I managed to climb up the side of the stall, jump on him, and then untie him. We left that barn at full gallop. By this time, my dad and those horses were quite some distance from the yard. By the time I was able to see Dad and he was able to see me, he had been dragged over a quarter of a mile over grass and rocks. He kept leaning towards that rope around his ankle, trying to reach it, but he never could. Finally, the pain was so intense that he turned over onto his stomach, and all the while, those two horses were going at full gallop. As I rode up alongside Dad, he yelled at me to stop those horses. I knew that Ranger usually shied at a voice, but this time, for some reason, he didn't turn an ear in my dad's direction. We just kept bouncing along, headed for those two horses. As I came up alongside the harnessed horse, I realized that the only way I could stop those horses was to grab that horse around the neck. But as I had no saddle, I had nothing to hold on to except Ranger's neck. So that's what I did. I threw myself out, caught that horse around the neck, held onto Ranger's neck, And there I hung between two of three racing horses. And they stopped. My dad sat up and began to untie the rope from around his ankle. "Don't let go," he said. When he was free, I dropped to the ground, still holding on to my pony's reins. The other two horses raced to the edge of the pasture. The realization of what had happened didn't really register with me. I wasn't even 11 years old. I thought my dad would get up, brush himself off, we'd go get those two horses, bring them back, load them onto the truck. But when I turned to look at my father, I could not believe what I saw. He was covered with dirt and blood. The overalls that he had been wearing were torn away on the backside from the waist down, and flesh on his buttocks was torn away too, exposing bone. To this day, I don't know how my dad stood the pain. He just stood there on the prairie, pale as a ghost, and said, "Good thing we brought your horse." The truck driver drove up and helped Dad into the cab. They headed for home. I rode those 6 miles home on Ranger as fast as his legs could carry me. When I got there, Mom already had Dad in the car and was driving out to Harvey Hospital, 50 miles away. My dad spent 2 weeks in the hospital. He came home after 1 week but had to go back for blood poisoning. But he made a complete recovery and lived to farm and ranch for many, many more years. The rope burn on his ankle never went away, though. And Ranger? Ranger and I continued to be best friends. As a matter of fact, this is only one story about Ranger and me.
That was Pippa White with Ranger and Me. Do you have an animal hero that fills you with fond memories? How about a human hero? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. And here's a reminder to check out the Appleseed lesson plans on our website, byuradio.org. Whether you're a teacher, a homeschooler, or a parent, you'll find lots of lessons and storytelling activities based on some of your favorite Appleseed stories. Find us on the Appleseed page at byuradio.org under a tab that says For Educators. We want to thank Antonio Rocha and Pippa White for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Assistant producers include Garrett Gunnell, Carrie Griggs, Kay Hendrickson, and Nico Wetzel. And our post team is Trent Reimschussel and DJ Cromartie. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcasts, Kaboom for original audio adventures, and Wink, stories for better bedtimes. All our podcasts can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, leave us a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed. I wanted to introduce you to another show from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The show is called In Good Faith, and it's a podcast in which host Stephen Cap
Perry talks with a different person in every episode about their walk of faith, their faith tradition, their relationship with the divine. And whether you want to strengthen your own faith or just listen to thoughtful conversations about religion and about a walk of faith with a terrific listener, that's Stephen Cap Perry and In Good Faith. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to In Good Faith whenever you like, whenever you need it. It's another great podcast from BYU Radio.